Welcome to Securing America with me, Frank Afte, the program that's a kind of owner's manual for protecting the country we love against all enemies, foreign and domestic, to the glory of God and his kingdom. We're going to talk today about an issue that is very much top of my mind. I'm going to give you a short brief on it, and then we're going to speak with one of our favorite guests, Kevin Freeman, about it. The issue is the so-called natural asset companies. The reason it's top of mind is that subterfuge, I guess one might call it, is being used to try to create out of whole cloth these so-called natural asset companies through the rulemaking authority of the Securities and Exchange Commission, thereby putting into play means by which private entities can obtain the ability to certainly exercise control and maybe actually own public lands, waters, air, at all levels, federal, state, and local, as well as even private property, all on the condition that their management preclude the productive use of such assets and resources. The whole thing is a scam, as best I can tell. It has very far-reaching implications for, not just property rights in this country, but actually for our society. Food could be impacted. Oil and gas extraction, mineral development, and even perhaps farming, and get this, hunting could all be affected adversely as well. If this doesn't sound like something you want any part of, I entreat you to go to sovereigntycoalition.org right away. We have until the 18th of January to persuade the Securities and Exchange Commission that it is not going to go down this road. You can very easily, not only the SEC know, but also your elected representatives in Congress, that you don't want any part of it. And I hope you will do so at, again, sovereigntycoalition.org. Let's get some more of the background on all of this from a man who understands better than arguably anybody in the United States at the moment how financial markets could be weaponized in a fashion against this country's vital interests and those of its people, and the extent to which this is very far advanced. And we are in a desperate race to make sure that people understand, as Kevin Freeman does, the proprietor of Economic War Room, the author of a number of important books, including Secret Weapon and most recently Pirate Money, just how much our adversaries could take advantage of this kind of arrangement deliberately for the purpose of advancing their interests and very much undermining ours, indeed our country as well. Kevin Freeman, it is always a privilege to have you with us, but never more so than today. I'm anxious to get your thoughts on these so-called natural asset companies and their implications for the economic warfare portfolio.
Well, thank you, Frank. You're correct. It is a matter of economic warfare. The catchphrase that we use with the Economic War Room is what we see as a marketplace, our enemies view as a battle space. Let's just take the natural asset company example. We see the SEC regulating the stock market, the New York Stock Exchange, and various companies that are all about the purpose of making a profit for their shareholders. That's why we have an American capitalist system. Well, our enemies have seen this as an opportunity to create a whole out of whole cloth, a brand new form of company, a natural asset company that has no intention of ever making a profit. In fact, it doesn't do anything. It's being paid essentially for doing nothing, for being anti-productive, to accomplish nothing. Like you leave the trees as they are and they take in carbon dioxide and they produce oxygen. So we'll pay you for that. Well, that's ludicrous. It's ridiculous. It's anti-American, but it is World Economic Forum. It is a part of this whack-a-mole, Frank, that you've been fighting, whether it's the World Health Organization trying to take our sovereignty, or whether it is now these natural asset companies or a whole host of other ideas. We're always on the defense, playing whack-a-mole, hitting these things, and then another one pops up, even after we've successfully killed the old one.
Yeah. Kevin, you know, in that connection, I did want to just sort of tie this into something that we've worked together on now for some time, the so-called ESG movement, environment, social justice, if you will, governance movement. This seems to be sort of taking that idea that capitalism must be put in the service of undermining our energy security, specifically, by putting climate change considerations at the top of their priority list, as well as the whole critical race theory and diversity, equity, inclusion, radical left agenda, Marxist really agenda. Am I right that this is kind of a spawn of ESG, and some would argue taking it to a whole new level?
Oh, yeah, it's a spawn of Marxism, essentially, critical theory, economic Marxism, cultural Marxism, all tied together with the intention of removing the American experiment. In 1776, we embarked on an experiment where we believed in individual liberty and individual property and an opportunity for people to maximize who they were and to build something great. And guess what? We built something great. The greatest nation probably in the history of the world was built on that liberty principle. All other nations had been built on the principle that the state was best, the king was best, and we were all subservient to that. We said, no, in America, we're going to say individuals matter and property matters, so that you can actually get the labor. When you work for something, you get the value of that labor paid back to you. And that's anything else would be economic slavery. That's what Alan West called it. So if you force people to give up what they earn, that's economic slavery. Well, here they're trying to take us back to pre-1776, which is a dark age economically. That's the intent of the World Health Organization, the World Economic Forum, the United Nations, and even the Chinese Communist Party. They're all using these types of mechanisms to take us back from the notion of individual liberty. And Americans, sadly, are sleeping and going along with it. And you, Frank, have been pointing out one by one, and the natural asset companies is nothing other than one more power grab where the elites control everything for their benefit and the rest of us are serfs living on their property.
Yeah. Well, thank you for the attaboy, but let me just thank you in turn for the great work you're doing in all of these spaces on Economic War Room, which people can find at Blaze TV, among other places. Kevin, let me just ask you, a woman that we've come to know in the course of learning about this gambit by the Green New Deal folks is a woman by the name of Margaret Byfield, and she runs America's Stewards of Liberty. We've had her on the program. I hope you'll have her on yours as well. A very, very astute property rights advocate and deeply knowledgeable about what this NAACS effort is and where it came from in the United Nations 30 by 30 agenda, now called the Sustainable Development Agenda. One of the things that she said, which just really, you know, captures the moment we find ourselves in, is she says that you either own property or you are property. Mm. And where we find ourselves is what you've rightly said was one of the foundational principles of this country, that you can and deserve to own property is in extreme peril at the moment as a result of this enterprise. Kevin, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I want to talk with you about another initiative that you're deeply involved in that I think is of surpassing importance, transactional gold. We'll get to that right after this. Stay tuned. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. On Saturday, voters in Taiwan will likely choose freedom over enslavement by the Chinese Communist Party. But Chinese dictator Xi Jinping has other plans and is now poised to impose them on the Taiwanese and the rest of the world. His ambitions are an incalculable danger for us especially because Xi is determined to prevent America from thwarting their realization. And now he's ready to ravage, if not destroy, this country thanks, among other things, to his successful infiltration of large numbers of apparent Chinese military personnel across the southern border President Biden has effectively dismantled. Consider this a red alert. We must seal that border, adopt a war footing, and task the FBI to stop hectoring January 6th patriots and focus instead on locating, rounding up, and neutralizing Chinese and, for that matter, jihadist operatives positioned to wage war upon us from within. This is Frank Affney. Welcome back. We're visiting with Kevin Freeman, our duty expert on all matters involving economic warfare and much more. He is the proprietor of a terrific program. It is called Economic War Room with Kevin Freeman. If it were of no other value, just the battle plans that he and his team put together make it an incredible resource, and I strongly encourage every one of you to take it aboard as faithfully as I try to. Now, Kevin, you had a concluding thought on this natural asset company, I call it Gambit or Scam. Give us that, and then we'll pivot to one of your other initiatives.
If we allow the SEC and the New York Stock Exchange and the World Economic Forum to collude and say that a company doesn't have to produce anything, but they can charge just for the cleaning of the air, what we will perpetuate is a scam that will remove all property. Because eventually you get to the point where you say to a homeowner, hey, you know, your grass is taking in carbon dioxide and producing oxygen as a result. You can't cut your grass. You know, if you're growing potatoes in the backyard, maybe the potatoes aren't the most sustainable vegetable. We can control what type of vegetable. Then you can control what type of food people eat. Then you can take farms away from farmers and give it to big business. This is a power grab by the Chinese Communist Party, who would buy up all our rare earth minerals and lock them away, or by big pharma, or by big food, or by big corporations to remove individual property rights. It has to be stopped because it goes essentially against individual liberty.
Yeah. You know, there's another piece of this, Kevin, and you're a man of profound faith, and I just wanted to point this out in a recent edition of the print edition of Epoch Times, a remarkably important newspaper. There is a piece by Wesley Smith of the Discovery Institute entitled "Nature Rights," in quotes, "Paganism Advancing in the West." And this suggests that what we've just been discussing, this effort to buy up property or take control of it, at least, for the purposes of ensuring that nothing is done with it, is, I believe, really just part of a larger agenda, which is so transformational, it's staggering. And what Wesley Smith is talking about is imputing to the land or the trees or stones, for that matter, inanimate objects, rights equivalent to human rights, in fact, to the point where, as you just were saying, you can very quickly find yourself unable to use any land or property whatsoever because it has rights that would be imperiled thereby. This sounds so positively crazy and certainly so at odds with, you know, the Judeo-Christian tradition, which, among other things, has, you know, God giving to mankind the responsibility for, yes, being stewards of, but also utilizing the earth. It's a monstrosity as far as I'm concerned, and it must be stopped. And again, folks, the way you can help do that right now is at sovereigntycoalition.org. And I hope you will take just a moment to shoot a comment to the SEC, but also put on notice your representatives in the House and the Senate that You don't want any part of this. Neither should they. Kevin, let me turn quickly to the topic of your newest book, a terrific, terrific, and very enterprising contribution to the public policy, you know, making process. It's called Pirate Money: Discovering the Founder's Hidden Plan for Economic Justice and Defeating the Great Reset. Kevin, we've talked about this with you before, but I know you are making great strides in bringing this idea of transactional currency to states across the nation. Give us an update on it and why it's so important.
Well, thank you, Frank. In fact, I am in Salt Lake City right now, about to meet with one of the heroes fighting the NACs that we've talked about, the treasurer, Marlo Oakes. And we're going to be sharing with him a plan that Representative Ken Ivory is proposing that should pass in the Utah legislature that would make gold and silver transactional money so that you would have an alternative choice, another way to pay. If you wanted to go buy your Subway sandwich, you could walk in and you could pay for it with US dollars, or you could pull a debit card out of your wallet and pay for it with fractions of an ounce of gold. It is revolutionary. It is going back, revolutionary, like going back to the founders, pirate money, and it will change the nature of our economy back to individual liberty. It fights directly against so many of these things we're whack-a-mole on, and we're trying to fight against what they're coming up with. Well, let's start being the mole and make them fight against us.
Central bank digital currencies, among
ESG, central bank digital currencies, all of those movements of the World Economic Forum to stop individual liberty. Well, let's start creating problems for them and not just solving the problems they're creating for us. We're going on offense with this. It's constitutional, Article 1, Section 10 constitutional. It's backed by Supreme Court decisions. All that's laid out in the book, Pirate Money. And I wish I could explain it. Took me 4 hours to do it reading the audio. But if people will go and buy a copy at Amazon, Pirate Money, or buy bulk copies at piratemoneybook.com, they'll get it. They'll transact in it, and we will change the economy. We'll be on offense this time and score a touchdown.
Yeah. Kevin, you have been my guru for years now on a particular problem that this would also seem to help address. And that is the deliberate destruction, it appears, by the Biden administration and its friends on Capitol Hill of the dollar as the reserve currency of the world. And you've been very clear-eyed for as long as I've known you, and before that even, 15 years, something like that, warning that this would be absolutely devastating to our economy were it to happen in the absence of some kind of alternative like that you're proposing. And just highlight, if you would, Kevin, the role states would play, including Utah, your native state of Texas, hopefully, in minting these alternative gold-backed currencies.
Yeah, well, there are 20 states looking at it. I'll be in Alabama next week, and then Oklahoma this week, and Utah, Alabama next week, Florida next week. 20 states of Tennessee have asked for our help in using Article 1, Section 10 money. It says no state shall make anything but gold and silver coin tender in the state. Therefore, we can make gold and silver. If they pass legislation, it will enable people to use a commercial application like Glint Pay, which exists today. You can go in on your iPhone or Android and look up Glint Pay. And they literally buy and sell for things with gold and silver, hold money as gold and silver. And the state legislatively can make that happen.
And why is that so important to trying to protect us against the effects of the dollar's destruction as a reserve currency?
Gold holds its purchasing power. When the U.S. dollar left the gold standard in 1971, from that point to today, which is now 53 years, in that 53-year period, the value, purchasing power of that dollar has declined by 88%. So what we have now is the ability to have, but gold has maintained its purchasing power. In 1971, a certain number of grams of gold would buy an average house. Well, right now, the house price has gone from like $17,000 to $600,000 average price. If it were priced in gold, it would have not only stayed flat, but you'd actually gotten a little bit ahead. So gold as money has held its value. The U.S. paper dollar has not. States can make it possible for people to have their money as gold or silver, which will maintain its purchasing power.
And we're hearing a lot about central banks elsewhere around the world buying gold in copious quantities. That presumably is already anticipating what we're talking about hurtling down the tracks in terms of people abandoning the dollar. And just very quickly, Kevin, Weimar Republic, of course, comes to mind. What happens if we've printed all this money and nobody wants it anymore?
Well, Weimar, Germany, Zimbabwe, Argentina, Venezuela, the currency dies. Paper money is poverty. Even the U.S. Continental Congress produced paper money that was poverty, according to Thomas Jefferson.
Wow. Kevin Freeman, a man you should have as your guru on financial matters. I hope you'll follow him closely at Economic War Room with Kevin Freeman, as well as here. We'll have him back soon. God bless you, my friend. Happy New Year and Godspeed on all of these projects. Talk to you soon.
Night after night, in cities across the country, black-garbed assailants clash with police in the streets, smash windows, and throw Molotov cocktails in an effort to destroy police stations, federal courthouses, and local businesses, all in the name of anti-fascism. Most Americans are now, sadly, all too aware of the movement known as Antifa. But where did they come from? What do they want? And how do we stop their campaign of violent mayhem? The Center for Security Policy Press is proud to present Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat. This new book looks at the history, ideology, organization, finances, and strategy of Antifa and provides an in-depth analysis for law enforcement officers, policymakers, and the general public. From street fighting tactics of the Black Bloc to fundraising by prominent left-wing foundations, Unmasking Antifa is the go-to guide to understand this elusive and dangerous threat. Get your copy of Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat at Amazon.com.
Welcome back, and I'm delighted to say welcome to our next guest. His name is Stephen Bryan. Dr. Bryan is a friend and colleague of many years. We served together back when men were men, I'm fond of saying, in the Reagan Pentagon, where he was responsible for technology transfer issues in particular as a deputy undersecretary of defense. He went on from there to become one of the leading forces in the defense industry in this country. He has been, among other things, a very senior staff member on Capitol Hill. He is, in short, a man of considerable experience, and we are always pleased to be able to pick his brains, especially in his role as a senior fellow of our Center for Security Policy. Dr. Bryan, welcome back. It's good to have you, sir.
Thank you, Frank. Happy New Year.
And to you, my friend. Let me start by asking about a rather important piece that you had in Asia Times the other day about Ukraine. And you've been following this closely. You've been, I think, prognosticating that this is not going well for Ukraine, for sure. You headlined, or people who published the piece at least, headlined the story as Zelensky, the president of Ukraine, must go before Ukraine collapses. Talk about sort of the underlying situation of an imminent collapse of Ukraine in your view.
Well, I think that you start with the fact the war is going badly for Ukraine. They're losing territory. The Russians are slowly, but they're moving the line across the whole line of contact, which is eastern Ukraine, and then in the south, in the Zaporizhzhia, and over to Kherson. aiming toward Crimea. And generally speaking, the Russians are moving and defeating the Ukrainian forces, pushing them back, and it's getting nasty. Now, we're in the middle of the winter.
Well, I think it's fair to say it's been pretty nasty for quite some time.
Yeah, nasty in the sense that when you lose a war, it's nasty. Mm. And I think they're on the brink of losing a war. Now, the Russians have many options. They may stop and say, okay, we've consolidated the main line that we want to protect Donetsk and Luhansk and Zaporizhzhia and so forth, Kherson area. And we can stop here and that's the end of it. Or they could decide to push ahead and try to take a lot more territory. I don't think the Ukraine has much option now because their forces are depleted very badly. They don't have enough manpower. Weapons-wise, they've used up virtually.
They don't have much manpower because a lot of it's been killed?
Either it's killed or it's left the country. There are a lot of Ukrainians in Europe, but not in Ukraine. And
I think Zelensky has said he intends to get 500,000 of them back somehow.
Well, yeah, I mean, no, I don't know where that number comes from. I don't think Zelensky knows either. But assuming that there were 500,000, a lot of them are in Europe, and the ones that are still in Ukraine don't want to fight. I mean, they're hiding from these guys coming out to try and collect them. There's some pretty nasty, press gangs, essentially. Dragoons who are going out and grabbing them off the street, pulling them out of sports clubs, from their homes. I mean, invading homes. It's a very, very bleak.
That's bad for morale, I think it's fair to say.
Well, there isn't much morale left. That's the other problem. There are some, of course, but not so much.
So, Steve, this is a pretty bleak picture, obviously, for those who believe that, Ukraine has been attacked by Vladimir Putin. What's the Russian side of the equation look like in terms of loss of manpower there as well as
they have lost
capacity to fight?
Yeah, I mean, they've taken losses. No one knows the real number. The Russians are very coy about that. And they've lost a lot of equipment. But the difference is Russia's a very big country with lots of manpower. So it's not difficult for them to replace it. And they've been
also using press gangs on their side of the border.
What they did was empty the prisons and give them a deal. You want to go fight, you get your prison sentence reduced or removed, and you can return to society after you fulfill the contract. So, they've done that. And they have a certain number of volunteers. And they have a draft, but they've moderated the draft. They haven't needed it very much.
And how about the wherewithal to fight, the artillery pieces, the ammo, the other equipment and missiles and drones that seem to be used in extensive ways?
Yeah. I mean, from what we know, the Russian industry is now running 24/7 and producing sufficient equipment to there doesn't seem to be any urgent shortage.
So it's not supplies from China or North Korea.
Well, they're
or
getting
Turkey
some from ammunition
Ukraine,
from North Korea.
Iran. Yeah.
And they're getting some drones from Iran, quite a few, actually. So we do the same thing, actually. So it's not that different. But I mean, that's what they're doing. But they have plenty of their own, too.
So the battlefield is advantage Russia at the moment, as you see it.
I think
the demographics of the fight and so on are on Russia's side. Yeah. So this brings us to the thesis of your piece in Asia Times that Zelensky is the problem and that he must go in order for there to be some sort of negotiations that settles this affair. Is that
the I think that's the bottom line, because Zelensky has said very clearly and multiple times that he will not negotiate with the Russians until every last Russian leaves Ukrainian territory. And until Russians...
Is there a law in the books to that effect?
Yes, there is. Zelensky got the VADA, the Ukrainian parliament, to pass such a law, which he says constrains him, so he can't do anything. Of course, he could pass another law tomorrow morning, but he's not going to do it. No, I think he's in a hole. And the bottom line here is that if Western capitals decide this is kind of a lost cause and maybe the best thing is to work out a deal with Putin and Moscow, then it can't be with Zelensky. So he has to leave.
So do we have ideas as to who else might be in the wings that would lead this? And under the circumstances you've described, is this really anything other than surrender to your way of thinking?
Well, I wouldn't. I would call it not surrender, but kind of realpolitik. You know, make a deal, get out, preserve your options for the future. That's about the best you can hope for.
The same is being said, of course, of Putin, and the preserving of his options with respect to Ukraine and maybe beyond is something that troubles many of us. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, sure. I mean, there's the most experts point to the fact that Russia will emerge from this quite a bit stronger. But I think it's also very, very much the case that the Russians have taken a lot of casualties and lost a lot of equipment. I don't think they have much enthusiasm for threatening Europe, for example. I mean, that's not their agenda at the moment. Could always change. But I mean, anything can change in the world. So
no, that's certainly true. But I guess the thing that one has to factor into this is Putin's ambitions. And what would you say they seem to be at the moment? Maybe not so much at the moment, but long term, Steve, I've always felt about him, for what it's worth, that you know, he's a man who has been notoriously embittered by what our old boss Ronald Reagan achieved in terms of taking down the Soviet Union, and seeks to, well, get even, I guess, at the minimum, if not restore things more along the lines probably of the Russian Empire.
He clearly wants to show Russia as a major superpower. One of the three, you know, U.S., China, Russia. And he has an alliance with China of sorts, which is very worrisome.
It's no limits partnership.
Mm-hmm. So, well, I don't know. I mean, you know,
that's what they call it.
Yeah, they can call it anything they want. But the bottom line is that you can never be sure about Russia and China because they have their own difficulties, let's call it that.
I think at the end of the day, the Chinese intend to gobble up as much of Russia as they can. So, you know, this is a short-term deal.
I think it's,
deal, it seems.
It's a practical arrangement for the moment. And it serves Putin's interests and China's interests. So it will continue. I mean, for how long, I can't say. Nobody can say. But you asked a bigger question, which is what's Putin's main aim? And it's to restore Russia's sovereignty and credibility, which a lot of which it lost when the Soviet Union collapsed. And he's running for a presidential election again. The elections are in March. So he's not going to do anything, I think, that's earth-shaking between now and then. He seems to have a lot of support in Russia. Most of the polls show that. So that's the guy. He's very smart. He's fairly ruthless. And he's very capable. So, you know, you have a guy who is all those things, but he also has an army that's not so capable always and that has lots of flaws. And he knows that.
But as you say, Steve, one of the things, and you know the defense industrial base issues vastly better than I, but as you say, his, you know, 24/7 operating of it is going to be replenishing and perhaps greatly expanding its capabilities.
They're doing
that,
very
that
well.
Brazil, that augurs.
We're
Ill.
Not.
Yeah.
We have real.
That's a story for another day. We're going to have to come back to you once again on our defense industrial base. And more generally, Steve, I think the thing that's so worrying to me about all of this is that whether it's the Russians alone or whether it's most especially the Russians and Chinese and the war footings that they both seem to be on and we are, as you say, not. I think is fraught deeply.
No, I think you're absolutely right, Frank. This is the big question, big problem.
We're going to come back to it with you in the near future, hopefully often in 2024. Thank you, Steve Bryan, for the work you do, as you have long done, and we'll look forward to our next visit soon.
Terrific.
We'll be right back with more right after this. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. On Saturday, voters in Taiwan will likely choose freedom over enslavement by the Chinese Communist Party. But Chinese dictator Xi Jinping has other plans and is now poised to impose them on the Taiwanese and the rest of the world. His ambitions are an incalculable danger for us especially because Xi is determined to prevent America from thwarting their realization. And now he's ready to ravage, if not destroy, this country thanks, among other things, to his successful infiltration of large numbers of apparent Chinese military personnel across the southern border President Biden has effectively dismantled. Consider this a red alert. We must seal that border, adopt a war footing, and task the FBI to stop hectoring January 6th patriots and focus instead on locating, rounding up, and neutralizing Chinese and, for that matter, jihadist operatives positioned to wage war upon us from within. This is Frank Affney. Welcome back, and a special welcome to Robert Charles, former Assistant Secretary of State in the George W. Bush administration. He has served in a number of other important capacities on Capitol Hill as a senior investigative staff member, as well as in the Reagan and George H.W. Bush White Houses as a congressional counsel. He's been a clerk on the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, as well as a member of the Naval Intelligence Community in uniform. We're very grateful always for his time. Mr. Secretary, welcome back to Securing America. Happy New Year to you, sir, such as it is.
Thank you, Frank. It's always a pleasure to be on your show.
Thank you. Let me start by asking you, I see you're in rustic gear, I believe up in the woods of Maine, an appropriate setting for a topic that I'm seized with at the moment, Bobby, and that is something called natural asset companies that the Securities and Exchange Commission has invited comments on, and we're encouraging people to comment negatively about this idea, well, for a variety of reasons, but I'd be very interested in your thoughts on, well, among other things, the constitutionality of having the federal government assign control over, well, national parks and other public lands, waters, air, and perhaps reaching into private property as well to, who knows, the Chinese Communist Party, among other malefactors, perhaps. Your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, Frank, look, I'm a big fan of Theodore Roosevelt. If you could look around the room I'm in right now, there are probably 10 or 15 volumes written by Theodore Roosevelt here. And in Maine, of course, we love the great North Woods, and it gets a little close at times, but we love it all the same. Having said that, there are both prudential and, I think, constitutional reasons to be very, very cautious about these new NAC companies. And I can think of at least three reasons right off the top of my head that they are a caution. So the first is that if you have private lands, as I understand these new companies that the SEC is being asked to just give a checkmark to and go forward with, if you have private lands and you authorize some federal activity on those lands, it could be a summer camp, it could be solar cells, it could be anything that you want, a path that goes across your land, that under this new ruling may permit the federal government to then overreach in a significant way and manage your property. So that's issue number one. Issue number two is the idea that federal lands we have always thought would be managed by the federal government, which is supposed to be responsible or responsive to us. We elect our representatives. Presumably, a president appoints people that are supposed to act on our will as we have articulated it through the campaigns. It looks like the federal government is trying in this mechanism. Again, it's a constitutional issue, too, to take that power away from the federal government, in effect, to disown that power and give it to large private entities that can do with that land what they want. So whether you're a left or a right or a Democrat or a Republican, you should be concerned about this ruling. The third thing is this is not really the way that we make laws in this country. We don't delegate and delegate and delegate until we have Well, up here in Maine, we're experimenting with that phenomenon in a new way. We have one individual who's decided that they will disenfranchise the entire Republican Party in the state of Maine by disqualifying Donald Trump from the ballot. And I think the courts will look at that critically, let's say. But this is a similar situation where you have a delegation of authority and then what looks to be a potential significant abuse of that authority. So my thinking, Frank, is, you know, if the Biden administration had given us some reasons to trust them, I would say, well, this might just be a mistake. But the reality is there is a tremendous effort at federal overreach. And the hardest part of this is that when you lose power, there's a one-to-one balance. Individuals lose their rights and the federal government gains them. It's not like there are more rights created and everybody gets new freedom of speech rights. No. So if you lose the right over your land, property rights, you know, if you go back, I'm going to say one last thing on this, Frank. If you go back to our Declaration of Independence, you know, we start out with the notion that life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness is what it's all about. Actually, Thomas Jefferson borrowed that from John Locke and his second treatise, where John Locke wrote, we all have the right, or should have the right, to life, liberty, and the pursuit of property. And ultimately, it was expanded to happiness. But the reality is, if you take away someone's private property, you have disenfranchised them, you have disincentivized them to go out and work, you have taken away one of the most fundamental aspects of their life. So I think this should be a defeated rule, and I think we ought to go back, and if it needs to be changed at all, let Congress do it with a new president.
Yeah. Well, this is really the key. There is a constitutional arrangement, especially for something so sweeping as, devolving responsibility for national real estate, federal lands, yeah, and the rest. So thank you for this clarity, Bobby. And I did just want to say, we'll come back in a moment to the ballot issue with Donald Trump. But on just staying with this for another moment, one of the other things that I thought you might find problematic about this is that in order for this whole enterprise to operate, they not only need to create new companies, but they need to create a new accounting scheme. Because after all, what they're ascribing value to is ethereal, to say the least. I mean, it's air, for example. And I think of it as a kind of alchemy. They're, translating air into gold. But Bobby, what does it say to you, just from the point of view of possible fraud, that we're really deviating from, well, general accounting principles, for example?
Yeah, I am not an accountant, but I will tell you that the principles you're articulating are right. And actually, I think you're departing also in some ways from case law, which supports those accounting principles. There's a reason why actually every government, and even within the private sector, we have standard accounting practices. And that is so that you can't invent things and pretend and hide and shift and push things around in different areas and make them look like they're either substantive or non-substantive. If they're substantive and you're trying to make them look non-substantive, that's to avoid taxes. If they're non-substantive and you're trying to give them value that doesn't exist, like the air, or if it's commonly held, like air and water, then you're trying to give the government more power than they have any right, literally any right, under the law to possess.
And even more cynically, to create a new level of wealth for the government against which it can borrow still more money.
Well, goodness knows, borrowing seems to be the very definition.
What could go wrong with that? Bobby, hold the thought. We'll be right back with more. We're going to talk about Donald Trump, the ballots, and more right after this. We're back. Again, we're joined by our very, very important and very loyal contributor to this program, the Honorable Robert Charles, former Assistant Secretary of State, among other things. Bobby is also a spokesman for a marvelous group that I'm proud to be a member of, the Association of Mature American Citizens. And you can follow his great work there and that of the organization at amac.us. Bobby, we talked a little bit about what has recently happened up in Maine to Donald Trump's status as a candidate for the presidency in the Republican primary. I guess technically he's still on the ballot, but the Secretary of State said he shouldn't be, and we expect the Supreme Court is going to take a look at this. Talk about this both in particular, but also as part of a more general pattern of what's going on here that's very troubling.
Yeah. You know, Frank, we all grow up, or we used to grow up, with the idea that democracy, one man, one vote, the idea that the government works for us, we don't work for it, was a central piece of how this country is run, what self-determination is all about. And that really goes back to the idea that really elections, we don't have any other opportunities. This is it, elections. And so we also wanted, and this is a general principle, to allow anybody to run for an election that wants to run for an election. Well, all of a sudden, you have this extraordinary upsurge on the left that it happens to be under the name of anti-Trump, but it really is an upsurge on the left against anything that would limit the power of government and would open up elections in a way that would assure that everyone has a free and fair. It's ironic. I would go around the world as an assistant secretary of state for Colin Powell and say, you've got to have free and fair elections. You can't knock people off the ballot. You can't politicize this. You can't take your legal system and use it for political ends. And now I come home and what do I have here? It's happening right here. In the state of Maine, the reason I think this will be quickly reversed, and I think the Colorado piece will be too, but the reason I say that, Frank, is that these are individuals or small group of partisan individuals who are trying to knock off the ballot the leading candidate of the other party in a state, which can affect the national or federal election cycle. So we can't allow that to happen, or tomorrow, for what it's worth, someone may decide as a secretary of state in another state that we're going to disqualify someone because we think they have dementia, or we're going to disqualify them because we think that they haven't checked the right boxes, or there are alleged crimes against them, et cetera, et cetera. So here's the bottom line. This secretary of state in Maine aggregated power to herself she does not legally have, okay? And she exercised it to the exclusion of all of the Maine voters, more than a million voters in the state of Maine. Doesn't mean they're all going to vote for Trump. Doesn't mean half of them are going to vote for Trump. But it does mean they had a right to vote for Trump. And why? She said because he is an insurrectionist under Section 3 of Article 14, Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, which is absolutely ironic. First of all, not one of the 700 Americans out of 120,000 who were on the mall that day, 700 were arrested eventually. Many of them have been detained without trial, which is another constitutional issue. But of that group, not one has been charged with the crime of insurrection, which they could have been. And the reason is both the prosecutors and the judges know it won't stick. So how logically can you call someone who gives a speech that they're entitled to, incidentally, as the president of the United States, as an official act of president? He was not a candidate. He was a president. How can you? And by the way, you have First Amendment rights even as a president. How can you have given a speech and that constitutes insurrection when not one of the individuals that you argue were incited have been charged with insurrection? But it goes way beyond that.
Let alone the president himself.
Bottom line, the 14th Amendment was designed, and that section was designed to keep the officers of the Confederacy from receiving a pardon from Andrew Johnson and in turn running for government again and for office. And that's because they were responsible for killing 620,000 Americans. It had only one purpose. It wasn't looking deep into the future. It was looking at the Civil War. So you have a perversion here. And to just expand it briefly, this emoluments idea that has just come up, it's just piling on. And you know, there's only one thing that really, really sticks in the craw of average Americans. They don't like an insolvent government. They don't like open borders. They don't like lots of crime. They don't like lots of drugs. They don't like their government being sold to China. But the thing that really bothers Americans is fairness. they really get up out of their seat to stand up and speak and act when they think that something is happening, an abuse of power that creates an unfairness. And every new charge, every new piling on of a political accusation that turns into a legal accusation that turns into election interference affecting the Republican Party is bothering average Americans. And that's why Democrats and independents, Frank, are really now beginning to tip in favor of Donald Trump, which is remarkable, but it's happening.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, this goes to the point that I wanted to just make in closing, and I have to do a quick takeaway myself. But, Bobby, this is all being done under the rubric of defending democracy is simply scandalous. And I think the American people are also offended by that as well. Bobby Charles, thank you. I'm going to do a quick takeaway for our audience, and I'll be saying goodbye to you in just another moment. Stand by. Just wanted to leave you with one thought, folks. There's reports in the news at the moment that the South Korean government is warning people on some of their islands to hunker down lest they be harmed by the kind of artillery bombardments that the North Koreans are engaged in. This is part and parcel, I believe, of some of the provocations that we talked about in our most recent Committee on the Present Danger China webinar. We've talked here on the show and in those programs a lot about what I call the bonfires of the tyrannies, the kind of conflagrations that Xi Jinping, the Chinese communist dictator, is engaged in around the world. There's a distinct possibility that his next bonfire will be on the Korean Peninsula. We looked carefully at it. I strongly encourage you to take a look at what we came up with in our webinar. PresentDangerChina.com is where you can find all of these. They're available for free. Please subscribe. You have a need to know, especially about what might be coming our way as well. We'll have to leave it at that for the moment. Bobby Charles, once again, thank you for your time, my friend, and your great service to our country, past, present, and future. We look forward to talking to you often in the course of the new year and hope you and yours are well throughout. We'll talk to the rest of you again next time. And until then, go forth and multiply.